It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey, that's pretty bad. The Raptors lose 111-96 against the Orlando Magic, who I think are now the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference. Pretty good run of play. They play some gritty basketball. And the Raptors lose another one. Again, caveats are in play. Not as much for like Emmanuel Quickley, who really struggled tonight. And there, you could have expected Emmanuel to get swallowed up. Like, he had a good opening to game one of this back-to-back situation, this home-and-home. But as the game went on, the Magic got really comfortable with how they wanted to play him. And it made me really worried, especially the way last game went. The Magic made the adjustment and pulled away. It made me think, like, how is this game going to go? And this game, the Raptors, they started out well in game one. This game, it just wasn't the same level. And I think they had some unique performances in this game, too. And certainly they didn't have, offensively, I think they had more depth, more performances that show like guys 3 through 8 on the roster are capable and able of doing things. But they didn't have a 31-point heater performance from Gary to rely on. They didn't have 10 assists from Emmanuel Quickley to rely on. Instead, they got a little bit of a heater from Jordan Wara. They got a little bit, you know, they got a better performance from Grady, who it's really, you know, watching him take on all these minutes and keep trying to develop and seeing some of the crazy attempts at the rim that he's taking from game to game. The Raptors, there's quite a talent deficit. And Orlando, they don't screw around. They play hard. They focus on the defensive end and they keep the Raptors under 100. I believe they're 17-2 on the season when they're capable of keeping their opponent under 100. And they certainly didn't have too much trouble with the Raptors in this game. And on the other end of things, like Franz, I think, had a better pacing for the driving lanes in this game. I think he was getting to a lot of spots. He looked very dangerous. And Paolo, maybe more so than anybody. I know he goes 4 of 7 from downtown. That's a big deal. But one turnover today versus 6 last night, or not two days ago. It was a really, really impressive game from Paolo, a guy who he does rely on the jump pass a lot. But man, in this game, he was doing such a good job of looking guys out. Like, you know, you're going to make that skip pass. You have to know where the weak side zone is. And he just had a lot of trouble in that first game, kind of identifying where the Raptors were cheating him into. And in this game, I thought he was premeditated, had a really great idea of what the Raptors were trying to do and play made around that. And, you know, Suggs is always like fun versus the Raptors. He's a fiery guard. He's really impressive defensively. His matchup against, you know, Quickley, he and Harris at different times, I thought, did an awesome job bottling him up. And these types of games, how do you describe them other than like the Raptors just, there's a talent deficit. They're not able to win these games when the other team kind of brings out the lunch pail. The Orlando broadcast was kind of, they were enamored with the Raptors' compete level. You know, the little runs they'd make to get it from 15 to 9. The little run they'd make to get it from 12 to 8. Like, well, it's a 4-point swing, even a run at this point. Not necessarily. But they kept describing the Raptors as feisty. And I think that they were giving the Raptors quite a bit of latitude, which I do as well. When you look at a team that, quite frankly, is starting a bunch of G League talent. And in a game where Jamias Ramsey plays like 18 minutes, Jonte Porter's 22, Wara's 25, Bruce Brown, who I actually thought was not bad today, quite frankly, but has not been so great over the last however long of time, or just as a Raptor in general, I think he's been like well below mediocre and relative to his own expectations, just like a shell of who you might have expected him to be. I didn't think he was too bad tonight, but the Raptors are just investing a lot of time and minutes into a very injury-depleted roster. And that's kind of where we're sitting. Ochai had, as far as like offensive output, 4 made shots, which is a little higher than usual for him as well. He's mostly out there to kind of like take up the defensive responsibilities against these big wing initiators and to like hang with those guys for as long as possible. You see like 31 minutes. He's not super involved offensively. He gets some looks, but you know, he's out there to play defense. And I think he's done a pretty good job of playing in scheme and also being a primary when, you know, if he's not on these Raptors, if he's on like a lot of different teams in the NBA, there's another guy taking these checks. There might even be another guy in the starting lineup. Starting Ochai as your power forward, the jig is up. It's tough to make that work. And the Raptors, they fight, not necessarily tooth and nail, but they fight. And I feel inclined to give them, and it's fine for anybody to disagree, inclined to give them the latitude to fail, considering the roster currently. The guys they've spent picks and stuff on in trades to like hold down the front court, Jakob Poeltl not here. Scotty Barnes, 4th overall pick, rookie of the year, all-star, not here. We're seeing some wonky basketball. And here's an interesting thing. I think I had seen this conversation kind of popping off in chat. And since there's not a lot of game to talk about, which we would, there's a discussion about Bruce Brown in chat and kind of discussing like, what is he worth currently? First round pick, et cetera, et cetera. Could you get that? Should you, you know, re-sign him on the contract that he has the team option for what, like 22.5 or 23 million? I don't think, based on his play over the past however long, even over the full season, like I think he underwhelmed a bit in Indiana as well. I think that you probably don't want to pay him $22, $23 million a year. However, he has a really unique contract. And then that option is really close to draft time, which means that if there is a team who is interested in Bruce and wants to, like, let's say there's a contender that wants to have money on the roster and is using the draft as like the, you know, money doesn't count and contracts are weird situation that happens during the draft where they figure everything out and money exchanges hands, etc. If a team with like a contending team without money to pursue anybody in free agency says it makes more sense for us to give Bruce $22 million and we want to win, we'll incur the luxury tax, etc. We'll do that instead of trying to find a guy who we think can do what he does for like, I don't know, the taxpayer mid-level exception or something like that. There's a situation like that. And then also, I don't know what happens with the, you know, his option. I guess we'll see. It's a unique salary structure. But Brown overall, I think, like, I've been surprised since he came over to the Raptors, the catch and hold aspect of his game for sure. Because that wasn't, when playing next to stars, that was never a really big aspect of his game. That wasn't something that, you know, you saw a lot of from Bruce, and he was a guy who operated, you know, a lot of times in the middle of the floor and kind of navigated those packed tight spaces with a lot of like feel, a lot of great feel for the game, you know, huge amount of intelligence and processed the court really quickly and had great finishing touch and even, you know, stepped out for three every once in a while. But now I think he's catching so often on the perimeter and he's not really going to get the play off of guys that so much of what he succeeds at on an NBA floor, it's not like it's gone. It's just not able really to be weaponized on these Raptors. And that's maybe a tough thing. And that's Bruce. But in this game, I think like he got out on the break. You know, I thought his defensive intensity in this game was better than it has been in quite a few other ones. And he finishes with 12 points and 4 assists. There was like a nice pocket pass he made. There's some stuff like that. But it's, you know, It's been a tough road for Bruce Brown. Matt Hogg is summing up the return for Siakam as it currently stands. Siakam for Kelly Olynyk, Ochai Agbaji, Bruce Brown, who may opt out, and two late firsts. LOL, ouch, broski. It could there was a reason I was disappointed with the return of the Siakam trade. Depending on, like, and the Raptors spent in a unique way, definitely. I didn't mind at all the trade. I thought the trade for Olynyk and Agbaji was a good one, given like the first rounder, the late first rounder. And I thought like, Kelly will help solidify the front court into the future, help facilitate good play for guys like Quickly and guys like Grady. And we'll see where Gary factors in over the next couple of years if he is there. But like Bruce not fitting well, not being able to play next to Scotty is tough. Ochai, the offense has just not really been there at all. It's been tough. And late first might be a bit too harsh on the Indiana pick. We'll see. That might be a mid first. Well, it's probably more likely a mid first than a late one. But Pascal's pretty good. It's not a home run walking away from that one. Will Smith asks, do you think War is a future piece for this team? He provides some offense, but as others have said, the defense needs to be better. Yeah. I think that War is like this. I wrote a piece about this maybe like a month ago where I've kind of been viewing War as a guy who has the potential to be a stopgap because the Raptors aren't really sure what they're going to do with Gary Trent Jr. at this point in time. Who knows if they come together to sign a contract and what that looks like into the future, because Gary's contract is up at the end of this year. They weren't able to collaborate on an extension to this point, not even close. And they also, you know, Gary was feeling out the market at this time last year, maybe a little bit earlier. And when we're looking at that, the reports were that he was looking for somewhere around between like $23, $25 million a year. He ended up, and he wanted that over a, you know, long term. And we're looking at a guy who had to take the $18 million player option, that wanted to use this team this year to kind of like step out onto the market again. But, you know, he went from like 18 point whatever points per game down to 17 the next season. I think he's at like 12.7 this season, maybe a little bit closer to like 13. Maybe it's 12.8. Gary's place on the Raptors, while essential currently, and that's actually in my next piece, is about how good he's been as far as like how good he's been since the All-Star break. He's been awesome. You know, his shot making has been insane. Some of the quick numbers, the tracking data on, you know, NBA.com isn't fully caught up, but like he went from, I think, a 27% pull-up three-point shooter to, you know, like a 38% pull-up three-point shooter. That's the difference between those two. Pull up two pointers, he's shooting 44% versus I think 34%. You know, he's hitting more of those tight contests, he's hitting more open contests, and he's still hitting a lot of wide open contests. There was a point in time this season where Gary was basically just like a side top side guy, where if the ball hit him for a catch and shoot opportunity, he was doing all this kind of stuff, hitting threes. But when we look at, you know, the creation in Darko's offense, the ability to kind of like extend plays with the dribble, all that kind of stuff, I think that he has like disappointed. So his future as a Raptor is not exactly ironclad. And Wara has he is the unique inflection of like athletic pop, can shoot it, can extend plays with a dribble. And it's just kind of like pairing those things together under the structure. I think that Wara will be more affordable in the team sense than Gary. And he can be a facsimile of Gary. I don't think War is better than Gary. And Gary comes out every game and shoots the hell out of the ball and has had carte blanche to do so for, you know, a decent chunk of time now. He scored the ball really impressively. It made a huge jump as far as like performance and as far as like, I don't know, being able to do that all the time. Gary can't do it all the time. He has hot runs. Wara certainly doesn't have the same level of juice in that regard. He's not exactly young relative to when he was drafted. But if the Raptors don't want Grady to just like 34 minutes per game next year, which I don't know what they want. I don't know what they want to do. But if they want like a stopgap for minutes for a guy who can run like a side pick and roll, or who can run stack at the top, who can hit catch and shoot threes, and at the end of the shot clock can like get into his bag a little bit, then War is a guy who's perfectly acceptable to be on the roster, considering the roster is very much in flux. We don't really know what this team's going to look like next year, though. Basically, Kelly will probably be there. Grady will probably be there. Quickly, yeah. RJ, Scotty, sure. But I think Jonte will actually be back with the team. I think the Raptors have been pretty impressed with him. But we'll see. It's, you know, Mark Cirilli says Wara has a good game once every 8 games. I think he's had 3 good games in a row at this point. And I think he had quite a few, like, stinkers. He had a tough time, a really tough stretch. I guess we'll see what happens. But I do think that Wara can be a stopgap of sorts as long as you don't, like, try and talk yourself into him being, like, essential to what you're doing. He's, like, an option you can go to, and he's not going to command a bunch of money. You know, he's going to be, like, affordable. The team is going to probably be happy to pay whatever, you know, puts him in a comfortable position money-wise and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's a possibility. But if Gary comes back, and there is a version of events where Gary does come back because Gary is, like, the consummate pro. He shoots the hell out of the basketball. He really does. He can hit wide open threes. If you want to facilitate some of Scotty's development, you want when Scotty collapses the defense and it hits a shooter, you want the shooter to make quite a few of those. Gary, I think he's shooting like 47 or 48% on wide open threes this season. That's a really great thing. Scotty creates those. There's that. There's some of the, like, end of clock, you know, not necessarily creation for others, but just shot creation for himself that he can get into his bag for. That's nice. The ball pressure on defense can be good at times, although he is wont to over gamble sometimes. And Gary is the consummate pro. He has been shuffled around this Raptors team so much. His role has changed so much, like, year to year. There's been not a lot of consistency from him. He's been removed from starting lineups. He's had, when it was Nick Nurse saying, like, Gary, you know, he has to play like Raptors basketball, there's been, like, subtle things said in the media that, you know, complaints about how he plays, like, all that kind of stuff. That's, like, Gary, through it all, talks incredibly positively about his teammates, never centers himself or his role, always is like, I'm just here to play the way the team wants me to play. And he does. And, like, could you, if you were being, like, super uncharitable, say, well, Gary doesn't pass that much, he doesn't do this, like, it's a selfish type of play. You could if you want to, but I think he's just a gunner, and I think the team asks him to shoot. And by, you know, evidence of this is that, like, the shot attempts went down as the Raptors changed and they, like, afforded him different shots. And I think they asked him to, like, hey, holster it just a little bit. We want to get looks into other guys' hands. I think he's been, and he is a mentor to some of the players, you know, that's like the truth of it. So there's some intangible stuff really working in Gary's favor. And I think, like, any interaction I come away, like, there's a tweet I have from, you know, maybe before the season started or the start of the year, but, like, he seems like a good man, and, you know, he has the respect of the locker room and the guys like him. And that's, you know, I don't know what the contract situation is. Like, Gary obviously has to, you know, look out for his future finances and all that kind of stuff, but there's definitely a situation where he comes back. There's a series of events going forward that a future that exists that involves Gary as a Raptor. To get this back to, I don't know, the game that happened, the Raptors, you know, as I talked about earlier, like, Powell kind of caught up to what they were trying to do to him defensively, and then also Franz kind of caught up to that. They didn't get bossed around on the inside of the paint the same way, which was nice. And I do think that that is meaningful for the Raptors, that they load up. Kelly had a better game defensively. I think that really, honestly, Jonte had a better game defensively. And as I said, Bruce Brown, we talked a fair bit about him for a guy who had like 12 points and 4 assists and his outlook with the team. But I thought that, like, his nail help was better in this game. Abaji, I thought, like, some of the primary stuff was pretty good and rotating out of it afterwards. And we're looking at a team that, like, the help was there. And they pulled from the corners usually. And, like, credit to Paolo and Franz for being able to spray there. And credit to some of the guys for being able to like take the corner pass, pump, and play make out of that and keep the play going. But the Raptors, as far as like their defense in this game, they had really nice stretches, but they're just really overmatched. That's what makes, you know, these games kind of tough to analyze, because we all see the team that's walking out there, and there are expectations, like there, whether it's on Twitter, I don't see it as much in the chat anymore, but I see people like upset. They'll tweet at me and they'll be upset about the team and all that kind of stuff. You have to kind of calibrate your expectations, and really you have to understand, you know, Ochai Agbaji is your starting power forward. Kelly Olynyk is your starting center. Like, I would have loved to see a better Emmanuel game. I thought he was really bad tonight, and I understand why he was bad, because Jalen Suggs is like, he's going to be in contention for all defense. He's very impressive on that end, but and quickly, quite frankly, didn't deal that well with all the extra attention at the level of the screen either. It's like, I get it. I would like to see him play better against it, though, quite frankly. Will Smith says, game question, what are your thoughts on Ramsey? Doug Smith seems like they won't keep him past his 10-day contract. Well, Doug, he hears a lot of stuff. Like, if he's saying that he probably doesn't stick around, then I would lean on Doug instead of me as far as like trying to predict player movement or like transactional stuff. If Doug's saying that, then, and I don't know what Doug has said, but if you're telling the truth of it, then probably not. I like J-Ram. I like Jose Ramirez J-Ram better, but J-Ram, you know, he cashed a triple in this game. It was interesting that, you know, we came in for his first practice, and I've told this story already, where, you know, Darko said he didn't miss a shot all practice, which I was like, what the hell? What a weird, like, what an interesting anecdote. And it made it seem like, you know, Jemias was like this insane shooter, which I hadn't seen much of Jemias if like for what, like 4 or 5 minutes in overlap of watching like Raptors 905 stuff, right? And I definitely didn't come to mind to think of him as a shooter. And in this game, he went 1 for 4 from three. He was a little bit overextended on some attempts at the rim, but you can see like, oh, it was interesting that he got there. Like a couple, you know, he's extending the dribble into the lane, seeing where the help is coming, pushing into space, then like jump stopping to a spot. Like, oh, that's good. That's good craft on the drive. But as far as like, you really have to pop to make a team like change the structure of their roster to come onto the roster midseason. Like, you're there. And the Raptors, they might want to like have a little bit of churn at the 10-day spot. So I'm not so sure. Some of the defense, like point of attack stuff, I actually liked quite a bit better from Ramsey. And that also might be why he was a +7. I thought his point of attack stuff was better. And he definitely, like, he cares, which is a big deal. And the Raptors have not, like, lacked care over the past handful of games. I think their compete level has been very high. But that's kind of those are my J-Ram thoughts. Some good cuts over the past handful of games, too. Jordan W. says Grady and Anthony Black exchanging jerseys is an all-time moment. Yeah, it seemed like it was premeditated. There was malice aforethought in the way they set that thing up. If anybody knows what their last names are, they stood beside each other in such a way that the combination of those two things was humorous. And even before, like, I was watching this happen as the game was ending, you know, they met in the middle and you had the camera from above was trained on them, but Anthony Black runs over to a cameraman and is kind of like, hey, like, you should get this. And then he comes over and they get the shot, the money shot. Yeah, which is, you know, I don't know if they were like texting beforehand and they figured that out, or if they like met together, talked about it on the court. Like, I think they had an overlap of some minutes in this game, but they each have a jersey and they're having fun. They're young men playing in the NBA. They both got drafted this year, both lottery picks. Like, hey, have a blast, do your thing. Jordan W says it was Anthony's idea. It had to be. Well, I wouldn't ascribe an intention to either one of them. It just happened in such a way. So that's the way it shook out. To focus, like, you know, I have, you know, questions asking me about like Wara. There's been a couple questions about other guys. I've already talked about this stuff just earlier in the episode, so my apologies. We're still maintaining for the Spotify listeners, who are actually more people listen on Spotify than on YouTube. So the linear nature of the show must keep going. My apologies to those who to those who join late. We're looking at a team, you know, Kelly. Honestly, in this game, we had less of the, like, they still ran delay action. They still ran, like, a bunch of high post stuff. But they ran more pick and roll in this game and gave a couple different guys a little more opportunity with it. But the Raptors, they're very, very, they like what they're running right now. They don't necessarily have the talent to run other stuff and create advantages at the NBA level. And we're watching a lot of the same stuff night in and night out. And the differences are like Grady wanting to take that extra dribble. And, you know, the ball flattens out to Grady at the 45 extended. And he's like, you know, jab, jab, cross it over. And then like get it back, go middle, left-handed swing, gets it stolen because, you know, he didn't notice or he wasn't able to dissuade the guy doing the weak side zone to try and like cheat above the breaks with the corner was open. That guy might have been sitting on it. It's just like turnovers, even in the losses, even in the mistakes, you can kind of see like, well, I know what went wrong on that play. And we're also looking at like Grady will probably know. He just has to be able to clock that during live game action and kind of make those adjustments. He's like a very talented passer as far as like hand-eye coordination. So is he probably able to, if he sees the guy start cheating the corner, like angle it and kind of swing it above the break? I think so. You know, it is what it is. Playoff Pierce says, what bothers me the most about the losing right now, even though I'm pro-tank, is I thought they could have ended the season playing 500 ball. Even if Scotty and Jakob were here, I think that was probably really optimistic, Playoff Pierce. However, I think that was in the realm of possibility. If they found a heater, you know, there's every chance Scotty, with how much talent and how much size he has, that he's able to drag the team to some truly nutty wins. Like, that's probably the most disappointing aspect of the season, right? Is that we don't get, like, the churn of the end of the NBA when Scotty is running, hopefully. You know, he could be, you know, a victim of the churn too, but I guess the hope is that since he worked on the cardio and since he is such like a, you know, a tremendous his physicality truly commands a lot of respect and attention. He could have ran roughshod over teams to close out the season. Like we could have seen like a run of play of like, this guy has like six games in a row of 25 plus points and you know, like over 10 boards and like over six assists. And it's just like, wow. But we didn't get that this year. And so I'm assuming your thoughts, Playoff Pierce, was like before all the injuries that they might have been able to do that. And had you asked me before all the injuries happened, I think that I probably would have said no, but not like, oh, you idiot. I would have been like, no, I can see how that happens, but I probably lean the other way. Lumpy Rex 007, right up my alley here. What bothers me most is Precious doing well for the Knicks. Not if you paid attention to my analysis. I have been... Precious was not necessarily a perfect fit in the Darko system. We saw so much success with the Raptors. There's so much like latent talent and ability there. He is one of the best athletes in the NBA, especially for when you account for like flexibility and strength. The fact that Precious, and I made this a video essay about this, you know, way back in the day, but Precious being able to like stonewall guys like Giannis, Jimmy, Luka, who do like they steamroll guys, but do it all of them in different fashions. The fact that like Precious is the unique combination of like incredible footwork, balance, and strength that he can take the blows from those guys and lock down. And also, there's also times where like I've referenced this game many times, but the Hawks stopped running pick and roll with Trae Young because Precious was locking down that play type for them. So they just started running isolation and they would walk Precious out of the play. Precious, when he finds the groove, and that's the whole thing, is like if you want to win on the margins, you got to find the guys who have had grooves before and you say, can we get that guy into a groove full time? Playoff Pierce acknowledges like Precious has come back down to earth, to be honest, to some degree, but he's still maintained like he's a very important part of the Knicks, and especially over that injured aspect of the season, injured, I guess, era of the season, portion of the season, whatever it is. But Precious is sitting on just like a treasure trove of talent and very, very physically gifted, one of the most in all of the NBA. And I still, when he got traded, was a Precious believer. And still Precious believer. And he's kicking ass on the Knicks. And good for him, because he was treated like a throw-in. But he's not. Precious is not a throw-in. He's a good player. And he can get, like, he could become a very good player in the NBA. We'll see how it shakes out. There's every chance that he doesn't become very good. There's every chance that he doesn't necessarily reach, like, good. But serviceable big is just like he can slump into that, really. You know, Will Smith says win-win trade. Yeah, I think like RJ was considered a throw-in as well, and he's taken off with the Raptors. Quickly, while he's had a few really rough games, somebody else, I can't remember, my apologies, had brought up, you know, the three-point shot not really falling in lately. There's more pressure on his three-point shot. He is a slower release than a lot of the elite shooters in the NBA. Like, he has a longer load to get it set, stay there, get the ball up. Like, it can take him longer to get the ball out. And so being the primary guy and not being able to work off of Scotty or, like, even RJ, right, it's tough for him to get his shot off. You've seen, like, the distance of his shots kind of creep back. So it's not, like, 23, 24 feet, but we're seeing, like, a lot of 25. 26, and he's also getting like a ton of, you know, defensive attention. He did in this game for sure, that is pushing him farther out and is contesting a little bit better, and they're just like sticking him and playing deny defense. You know, he's in a really tough spot. Mark Cerulius says Precious Achiuwa has a Commodore 64 operating system in a modern gaming computer. 888 MJL says, I believed in Precious until I saw him in person against the Timberwolves in person. Yeah, I watched Precious at a lot of practices, and he just so happened, like, we don't get to watch the practice, but you watch the players at the end of practice, you know, break out into their groups and go into their personal work that they want to work on stuff, and they start doing like dev stuff with coaches one-on-one or two-on-two or something like that. And Precious, I'd watch him shoot. Even as, you know, he was just coming off the season where he shot like 44% on catch and shoot threes post All-Star break, was doing it on like maybe like 3.9 per 36. Like, he had a lot of volume from three, was hitting them. And obviously that was the best run of his career, was that incredible post All-Star break run with the Raptors, as the Raptors kind of vaulted themselves more concretely into the playoff picture. And even then, you know, you go to practices the next season, which was when I moved to Toronto for the beat job, and I'm watching this guy in practice miss a lot of threes, like a lot of threes, and airball some, and just like crazy, crazy. And it made me feel different about seeing him shoot it in game. Like, if I'd never seen that, I probably would have been like, well, it'll come around. But I don't know about all that. However, his driving game, his handle at his size, his defensive chops, his physical tools, it's there, baby. He's really got it. This is a lot of Precious Achiuwa talk. But we are witnessing another loss where the Raptors have half their roster injured and they're up against it. And there's not much to talk about in this game. We talked about how Emmanuel struggled. Gary hit some shots, yes. The off-the-dribble stuff continues to impress me. It wasn't as available beyond the arc in this game because the Magic were funneling him downhill. So he got middle, and he used like a couple like pound dribbles to get to his spot, hit a turnaround, or get middle and just like a straight midi pull. Great. Like, really impressive. 15 points on 12 shots. He had 3 assists, which is, you know, that's a lot for him, especially to 0 turnovers. He had 5 boards. He had 2 steals. Like, Gary was solid in this game. 30 minutes, almost 31. And he just goes out there and does it, you know. It's I commend him. We talked about Grady. Glad to see him go 2 for 3 from downtown. One of them above the break. Good. He really, you know, he was a minus 27 in this game. He was a minus 32 last game. It seems like what's happening is when Grady is on the floor, he's getting, you know, he's getting more, he's getting more room to like try things. Like Grady, he had a really great stretch where he was making plays mostly just as a cutter and a shooter. And that's when he got to work off of like Scotty and RJ. Now, what we're seeing truly is Grady like having playmaking opportunities and trying to like create off the bounce, and he's struggling. And he might also be hitting like a little bit of a rookie wall. Like, these are a lot of minutes. My body's changing. I'm trying to get muscular. I'm trying to get cardio. I'm trying to stick and all this kind of stuff. You can see how he's reading the game, and it looks really good. He just needs to, you know, slowly gather all the, master his talent in the way that he can, and also like keep reading the floor well, keep shooting the ball. And none of this stuff, like none of the Grady games recently have been good Grady games, not really, but they've been games where he's been trying stuff, outrageous, you know, attempts at the rim, really like big dramatic passes, and honestly just kind of like being guarded by good defensive guards in the NBA who see his dribble and want to jump him. That's what's happening. That's the Grady experience currently. And Kelly, you know, calm, cool, collected, playmaking from the high post, out of handoff situations, you know, some rebounding here and there, you know, a keeper play here and there. But this Raptors team, there's a lot of the same. You know, Jordan W. says, all these losses feel the same. I don't envy media right now. Well, don't feel bad for us either. Like, I totally understand. Like, somebody asked me, I think earlier in the season, they're like, you know, is this fun? No. And I've talked about this before, but like, when the team isn't as good, people get angrier at the people who talk about the team, like unequivocally. And they get angrier at the players on the team, and they get angrier at the coaches. And so that creates like, and since I have to engage with all this, I'm engaging in like a tangibly more negative environment, and honestly a pretty negative environment. But I'm also watching basketball and talking about it. So while some people are really negative, I'm just like, damn, that sucks. But I'm watching basketball, not great basketball, but watching basketball, doing the thing. And that's just the way it is. It's tough, man. You know, we have a good question here. Jing Pang says, what sort of a playoff run do you think the Orlando Magic can achieve with such a good defense, but a so-so at best offense? Yeah, I know in the churn of the regular season, Orlando has vaulted into the top four. I would be pretty surprised if they win a first round series. So what type of playoff run do I think the Orlando Magic can achieve? I'm not so sure they can achieve a run down the stretch, or down like years down the road, as Paolo and Franz kind of figure out their fit and really they kind of solidify the jump shot as they go put work in the summers. I think that this team has the legs and the potential to do stuff. And I think the defense can get better, quite frankly. And they're a fun team. I enjoy watching Orlando kind of grind their way through games. I like grindy teams, you know. Maybe like not a lot of people like this, but I loved watching the Houston Rockets when it was, you know, Harden and Paul at the peak of their powers, just switching everything on defense and just like walking the ball up the floor and like, we will play one-on-one. We will grind this game to a halt and we will beat you. And they almost beat one of the best teams of all time just with that ethic. I love grinders, and these Magic do grind. But my love for this team will not allow them, you know, any better a chance to win a first round series. I'd be very surprised if they won a first round series, but I would celebrate it. Boy, would I celebrate it. And it could be something as easy, I suppose, as like Paolo or Franz popping the hell off, and maybe both of them, right? That's what happens when you have young stars like Scotty. You know, I don't think the Raptors win the 76ers series, but It was disappointing that Scotty didn't get his, like, the full playoff series to kind of, like, announce himself on the scene, especially since his first playoff basket is a post-up from the corner against Tyrese Maxey, where he takes it middle, says, "Embiid, will you step up and jump with me?" and dunks. Like, I would have liked to see him not get injured and to have the full scope of things. And that'll be, like, super fun for Orlando fans, is that Franz and Paolo, I mean, they could pop the hell off. Even Jalen could really pop the hell off. I think Jalen's had an awesome season. He is a guy who really struggled initially, but you could see what was going to work with his game. And you knew he's, like, always been, you know, noted as a really hard worker. You thought that the jumper would come around in some meaningful capacity, and it has. And what you get now is, like, you know, maybe the easiest comps, and I hate comps, are, like, you know, Derek White, Marcus Smart type of, there's a range of outcomes in there where, you know, Jalen could be very, very good and very, very meaningful to winning basketball for, like, a long time. So the Magic are fun and cool, but I don't know about a first round series, honestly, even then. Will Smith says Knicks Orlando could be interesting, or Cavs Orlando. Yeah, I think I would give the Orlando a better chance against the Cavs than I would the Knicks. I think the Knicks will end up just healthy enough to win a first round series. And I don't know if they'll be fully healthy for, like, round two, but those Knicks, like, if you think these Magic can defend those Knicks, oh my God. I loved that trade for the Knicks when they made it, because I was like, this puts them in a position where if they can go get, like, a really good offensive player, this team could win a championship. And I felt that way then, and they were even better than I thought they would be after the trade. I mean, they're what, like 15-2, 16-2 with OG in the lineup? Insane. He toggled perfectly into what they wanted to do and made their defense. He took it like a million steps up. And obviously he had, like, what, scar tissue or a bone floating in his elbow or whatever the hell it was. That sucks for OG, but he's getting bit, like, he's back in the lineup now. Hopefully everything shakes out. Marcus Aurelius says the comparison I saw from Jalen Suggs was Josh Hart. I can see some of the wisdom there, but I think Jalen will be better than Josh. But I do really like Josh. Josh is a really fun player. I've advocated for Josh the Raptor many times before, but obviously that didn't shake out. And now he's on a really fun Knicks team. You know, Coco says here, you know, I want the Knicks to get healthy. They are so fun. And, like, they are a super fun team. Phoenix Plays East says, do you talk about that Kyrie shot? For anybody who doesn't know, since we're doing NBA potpourri right now, because the Raptors lost another game where not a ton of interesting stuff happened, and we talked about it all already. Kyrie, what makes that shot special, obviously, is that it is like an 18/17-foot left-handed hook/push shot over Nikola Jokic that he caught running up court out of the corner and used, like, a really great hezzy to get Jokic to sit on the pole, and then a push dribble into the middle of the floor to get space, and then pick up, left-handed push. I play basketball left-handed. I don't know how many times it would take me to hit that shot, just, like, mimicking his motions. And then you do it over Jokic, you do it for a game winner, and you do it on your wrong hand. Kyrie has always been, like, one of the most talented players with the basketball to ever play. It's like, he is incredible. There's a level of showmanship there that, like, he's not necessarily a showman, like, I'm Kyrie, this is the show. Sometimes it feels like he respects the game and the artistry of the game, that he, like, feels a moment coming on and is like, it's time to perform. He is really compelling on the court. And he is, you know, his temperament on the court too has been something that I've always, like, been so astounded by. You see, like, just nothing but, like, positive interactions with players. He's just light out there. both in how he dribbles and like conveys himself around the court, but then also how he interacts with people. It was just like, you know, wow, that shot, it blew my mind. You know, Phoenix Plays E says it's like watching the Picasso of hoops. Yeah, he's an artist out there. Really, he is. And I think sometimes, you know, people get, you can get a little bit too like, twee with how you describe basketball. If you want, people do go there, but it's hard to get too twee or mawkish about Kyrie Irving. He really is just like, you watch him play basketball, crazy. Coco says Ramadan Kyrie strikes again, mashallah. Yeah, I know Kyrie observes some fasting and some holidays, but I always see this because like when he pops off, a lot of people like, they say he's Muslim, but I thought he said he was like spiritual and that he like respects the religion and like believes in a bunch of different things. Maybe I don't know if he's strictly like Muslim, but I actually don't know if he's observing Ramadan, to be quite honest, but I didn't actually get an opportunity to wish, you know, Ramadan Mubarak to anybody, but there it is. I hope whoever is observing that is enjoying the time. Big time of the year for Muslim people, obviously. Yeah, but like a hell of a shot. Really, really impressive. But I don't actually know if we concretely know Kyrie's like faith. Playoff Pierce says, yeah, I don't think he is Muslim or fasting this year. And then Phoenix Plays E says he said he was fasting post-game today. Look at this. When this happens, I always think to myself of when I used to do the podcast not live and there was like no chat. And then I think of like how sometimes I'll wonder aloud about something and you guys provide an answer. Fantastic. Just like a flow of information that I get to read and react to, which I'm bringing to an end at this point. I didn't do it at the peak concurrent viewers because I'm a dummy, but if anybody wants to like the video, helps the algorithm, helps suggest it to other people who, for whatever reason, are perusing around YouTube and say, I'd like to watch a recap or a schmuck discuss what happened in the Orlando Raptors game, which I don't know about all that. We'll see. And then if you want to subscribe to the YouTube channel as well, feel free. And if you have the means, I guess you can subscribe to the website. GPWW, one last question, says, is the lack of, quote, fight in terms of physicality, mentality, etc., a product of the losing record, injuries, other things, or a fundamental lacking in terms of player characteristics? I don't think this team has a lack of fight. I think this team played the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference, a super gritty team, two games back-to-back. And I think that a lot of the guys that are playing currently, like, who on this team would make a playoff rotation? Gary wouldn't make a lot of them. Kelly would be, like, a matchup type guy. And Emmanuel would make some. Most. This is not a good team we're watching. They try. They try. This team tries. Sometimes, guys, ball watch. It's more pronounced on this team what they don't do good at because they don't have the talent to paper over it. But this team tries, man. I really, really think this team tries. You know? Phoenix Plays East says IQ is in Boston's rotation. Yeah, probably. Playoff rotation. So I'm thinking like 7 or 8 guys. And yeah, he would be. But anyway, this team does try. I think this is just not. It's okay for the team to be worse. Like, they really brought it against the Nuggets, and they tried with the Nuggets kind of like taking off the first portion of the game. The Raptors battled. They really did. And this, like, they battled against the Magic. Magic are just better and bigger, and the Magic did not let up on the Raptors. They weren't like, no, you're going to have a chance to, like, make a run, and we're going to kind of, like, take it easy. We're not going to, like, that kind of stuff. You know, Coco here says you can't try your way into winning against much better teams. Not if they are also trying very hard. If there's like an effort deficit with the talent, you know, who knows? GPWW says, I don't doubt their effort. Just seems like maybe the lack of height really pronounces the getting pushed around more. Yeah, I asked Darko about this. The last time I talked to Darko, I asked him about, you know, being small, how hard it is to go, you know, back to back to back all these nights and try and like, man, try and battle with teams that are much bigger. And Darko didn't really want to, you know, like shit on the team or anything like that, obviously. So he took that question, my critique of like, you know, this team is, they're getting beat up in the paint every game. And he used that as an opportunity to say like, I think they battle hard. I think we try hard. So yeah. But I think everybody knows, the team knows too, like they're up against it. We have two things. Phoenix Plays E says, question, how badly do you think the Magic will get exposed in round one? I actually dedicated somehow like 5 minutes earlier in the podcast to that topic, if you want to go scroll back and find that. And then Playoff Pierce says, Clippers, Pelicans, Samson, give me a pick. Pels. Let's go with Pels. Although I really like both of those teams. All right, everybody. That's a podcast, I think. We got 50 minutes. We got like 25 minutes on one of these. We did 50. We should all give ourselves a pat on the back, honestly. 50 minutes on this game is pretty gnarly. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. And whether you got into this in the morning or at night, have a blessed day and goodbye.